Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
And we talk about the representation of women in movies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's our job.
We're making millions of dollars doing this.
I feel like sometimes people get the wrong idea of how much podcasters make, which is $0.
Yeah.
It's wild. Anyways, this is our show about the portrayal of women in movies. We use the Bechdel test as a starting off point. Bechdel test being a media metric invented by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, that requires that a scene in a piece of media have two female identifying characters with names that talk to each other about something other than a man.
Sounds simple enough.
But most things don't pass the
test. Oopsie-daisy. Let's demo it, shall we?
Sure.
Hey, Jamie.
What, Caitlin?
Do you feel that the odds may ever be in your favor?
Usually I would say no. I feel like I would have. I mean, I know this is true of all survivalist movies, but I'm like, oh, I died 45 minutes ago. I was like, oh, there's no fucking way. But I also felt that way about many characters. And I won't specify the gender so it passes the test. Okay. In conclusion, that passes the test.
Well, how about a conversation that won't pass the Bechdel test?
I hate Josh Hutcherson's hair in this movie.
Fair. Mine was going to be, Jamie, did you know that the actor who plays the game maker in Hunger Games is neither Jim Caviezel nor Milo Ventimiglia? Thought it was one or the other of them. Turns out neither.
It's Ventimiglia.
Oh, shit.
We need to talk about men more, I think. we're super excited to talk. We're talking about the Hunger Games today.
Yes.
Hunger Games won. So Hunger Games stands. Don't slide into our mentions asking why we didn't refer to Hunger Games. How many movies were there? 900?
Four.
Too many. Don't ask us about the other three. I am not prepared to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the first movie that came out in 2012 today.
Yes. And here to join us in our discussion,
yay,
we've got the hosts of Teen Creeps podcast. It's Kelly Nugent and Lindsay Kaytai. Hi.
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 Thanks for being here.
Ooh,
thank you for having us.
Of a cannon.
There.
Or hopefully not sound of a cannon.
Because that means you died.
I'm going to kill all of you before this is over.
Oh, yeah. What if by the end of this, there can be only one victor left?
Ooh.
I wish I had known that ahead of time. I don't think I would have agreed to do the show.
I volunteer as tribute to be killed first.
They're like, that's not how it works. You're like, I want to make it happen.
Yeah, I want to be the girl in the crowd that raises her hand and is like, please kill me. I'm ready to die. That's a fun fanfic version. Oh. And then that's like galaxy brain, because if you're like, Elizabeth Banks, step on my neck and kill me, and then she's like, no, you're gonna live, and you're like, oh no, and then you live forever.
Oh wow.
It's so reverse psychology.
Different kind of psychology.
Dystopian people are so easily confused.
So for the two of you, what is your history relationship with this movie, the franchise? Have you read the books, all that kind of good
where
stuff?
Where are we at?
So I did not read the books or the movie or read the movie or I'm okay.
We're here.
Didn't
with
read the movie, did, and I did you? Watch the book.
Yeah, I put it on a chair and stared at it for hours.
It wasn't great.
I didn't do the movies or books until like later, after they had been out for a while, because I was very like anti at the time. I think I was just like, I only like adult fiction. This was obviously before Lindsay and I started our podcast, because all we do is read stuff for YA audience.
Yeah.
But then I finally gave in and I like watched the first movie and I was like, oh, dang, I like this. And then I went and like found the books and read the books. But I don't really remember the books. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay, good.
What about you, Lindsay?
I read the books first. They were recommended to me by a friend who thought that I would like them. Mm-hmm. And I did like them. I liked them fine. And then I liked the movie fine.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Very diplomatic.
I liked it well enough. Yeah. I truly don't have a terribly negative opinion about them, or I'm not super amped about them either.
Ambivalence.
Mm. But, you know, solid.
I feel like that's fun. A common both theme in this solid. Room towards this franchise.
Yeah.
I think respectable.
So. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jamie, how about you?
This is one of the many franchises that I just completely slept on. I don't know what I was doing when these books were coming out. Maybe I was taking yet another foray into being a guy's gal and just missed the entire thing. Mm-hmm. I just started seeing movies 3 years ago when we started this podcast. So I remember the books were popular, and I also felt like I'm too old for this, because I feel like I was just like a teen and wanted to be too old for something.
Did you think that they were similar to like Twilight, kind of?
No, but they're like the same era of book, right? Like, I think that Twilight might have been the last YA fiction I read before I decided, like, arbitrarily that I'd aged out of it. But I don't know. I think that maybe if I were a few years younger, I would have read these books, but I didn't. And then I just had really no desire to see the movie, even though I had a very weird formative crush on Josh Hutcherson that I no longer stand by.
Interesting.
But he was in this movie called Firehouse Dog, and I was there for Firehouse Dog.
Okay.
For some reason.
It sounds familiar, but I can't think what it is.
I couldn't tell you one thing that happens in the movie Firehouse Dog. I was really there for Josh Hutcherson, and the rest of the people there were like nine. I have no history with this franchise is what I'm saying. What about you, Caitlin?
I read the books, I want to say must have been like 2010 or maybe a little bit later. I think I read them in preparation for the first movie coming out.
Got
so that would have been probably a little bit sometime in like 2012, I guess. I don't know. In that frame of time. And then I, since then, have seen each of the movies in theaters. And that makes me sound like I'm a big fan of this franchise, which I, again, would not call myself. I just tend to see most movies, especially ones that are big and that, you know, people are going to talk about. Because, you know, I like to be a part of the conversation.
Caitlin's addicted to the discourse.
I sure am.
Yes.
So I
love a cultural moment.
But I think I've only seen each movie once, aside from the first one, to prep for the episode. And I remember thinking the movies are better than the books, in a rare case of me thinking that, because I feel like the movies are just more streamlined story-wise, especially the third one gets really sloppy in the book. And I'm just like, what is even happening?
I heard that. I don't think I actually read the third one, but I did hear it was very sloppy and the movie was better.
Yes.
Wait, what happens?
Well, they overthrow the government.
Yeah, she becomes like Katniss becomes a symbol for like the revolution of like them trying to overthrow this like totalitarian government.
Right.
And then but like she's very moody for a lot of the time and like doesn't really do much.
You know what? This is a classic Harry Potter book. What is it?
four, five.
Yeah, is it the one where he gets really moody and like loses five. His temper yeah. In a tea cake shop or something? Where I was, I remember getting to that part and being like, I don't need any part of this. But I don't think I could be there for Katniss being that moody.
Yeah,
but
I
lost she is always that moody.
She's a pretty moody.
She's like 100% mood, 0% personality.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do agree that she does not have much of a personality, which I don't like. I mean, and again, I haven't read the books, and so I'm like, I don't know how much of this is just Jennifer Lawrence make. I mean, it's Jennifer Lawrence is weird. I feel like she's a polarizing actor mm-hmm. for many. Mm-hmm. I always kind of like get leery around conversations like that because I'm always like, people are more critical of actresses than of mm-hmm. actors. Mediocre actors flourish all the time. Mm. I don't love her performance in this movie. I feel like I don't know if the character is written to be kind of like boring.
Yes,
it but is. I found that is true. Her it is written to be boring, unfortunately. Oh.
Well, I don't think she did a great job.
I don't think what's her face sat down and went, I'm going to write a really boring character.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is what ended happened? Up being on the page.
Yes.
Her personality is, I'm hungry.
Yeah, yeah. I'm scared. Oh, no. Yeah. What have I gotten myself into this time? Like the part, definitely felt that feeling a lot. Like right when Lenny Kravitz is like 30 seconds and she's like, oh, no.
Right.
This is high visibility for strong female protagonists that are also boring as fuck. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I will say she's a little less boring than like the most boring female protagonist, which is Bella Swan.
Oh, sure.
Oh, for sure.
Because she at least like has opinions, which is like, I don't like this.
And a skill. Like a skill. She has a strong
skill. She's good at hunting and tracking.
And she doesn't trip nearly as much as Bella Swan.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not as clumsy.
But when she does trip, the stakes are high.
That's true.
She falls down a freaking giant hill.
Yeah. I was like, very high stakes. Oh, that would hurt.
I was like, ouchie.
And it's like right at the beginning.
I know.
It's
so early that
she falls for so long.
It felt like, what is that movie that's supposed to be parodying Kung Pao? Is that like karate parody movie where there's a scene in that movie where a baby falls down the same hill and it's clearly a puppet and it falls for like 45 seconds and like it's really funny.
Or it's like Princess Bride, so Katniss is just like,
strong character that I was not emotionally compelled by even for a moment, except for the stuff with your sister, but we'll get to that.
Sure. I'll do the recap and then we'll dive into the discussion.
Yeah, and everyone feel free to
talk over her so she gets nothing out.
Yeah, awesome. I'll just talk about my day.
Okay, so we open with some like text information about the Hunger Games, which Jamie, as you pointed out, is in Helvetica font.
Ooh. Oh my gosh. Okay, wait.
That font was not.
I do.
At least it's not papyrus.
It may as well have been. No. I was so shocked. I was telling Caitlin and Aristotle upstairs and Sophie as well that I had to stop and make sure I was watching the right movie. I'm like, oh, maybe this is like some weird, like off-brand version of the Hunger Games, but I'm like, they had a $78 million dollar budget, and the movie opens with six slides of Helvetica
it
font.
It was literally the same font. I was, let's not worry about why, but I was looking for a video of someone playing Through the Fire and Flames on expert mode on Guitar Hero 3, and I clicked on it, and it was like, I think I got Rickrolled, because then it was like a picture of a cat, and then like font over it that was like, thank you for coming to my channel. But it was that font. It's like, that is what's happening on Hunger Games.
It's a 13-year-old's please like and subscribe slide at the beginning. I was shaken to my, I feel like that is the most emotion I felt in the entire movie, was how viscerally I responded to the Helvetica font at the beginning and the end, because the movie ends and then it fades out and says like directed by Gary Rouse, and you're like, the Helvetica's back. Like, it's so jarring.
Yeah, really bad.
The true villain of
true
the
dystopia.
Movie.
Yeah. True dystopia.
Right. Yeah, like, is that making commentary? Like, Helvetica will outlive us all, I guess, in a way.
It's the cockroach of font.
The last I'll say about the font is, like, if you've got $78 million, at least use a serif. Like, it's ridiculous.
Some kind of flair.
Ugh, unreal. Anyways.
I hear you. So the content of the
couldn't even read it.
The, seven-hour episode. We learn that there are 12 districts of Pan Am, which sounds like an airline, and but it's the country that used to be the United States of America. And each district will offer up a male and female between the ages of 12 and 18 at a lottery selection ceremony type thing called the reaping. And the children who are selected, also called the tributes, are sent to the capital and then transferred to an arena where they will fight to the death in what is called the Hunger Games. Right.
They're like, what if the Bachelor plus Survivor plus Apocalypse plus a so-so Elizabeth Banks performance? This franchise answers that.
Yes, because the Hunger Games are televised as a like reality TV show for everyone to see, and everyone fights to the death until a single victor remains. And I don't mean a person named Victor, of course, because that would not pass the Bechdel test.
One victor per Hunger Games.
But will he be the victor?
I think that'd be a great, like, I just got into The Bachelorette, which is my shame, but I kept trying to like picture the contestants doing like talking heads, because that's the only element of reality TV they shirk for this.
Hilarious. Right.
It would be so fun if Josh Hutcherson were like, yeah, I'm kind of starting to catch feels for Kat.
Or if he's like, so we see him, you know, he's sided with the bad guys and he's like, so I might have been on the wrong side of history.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so we meet Katniss Everdeen. That's Jennifer Lawrence's character. She is from District 12, which is like a poor coal miner part of Pan Am. And Katniss is a skilled archer. She hunts for food for her and her family, which is her mother and sister, Prim, who she loves dearly and who is stressed out about this upcoming reaping.
Can I just say, Prim's fine, but like, I just don't see, like, from what I saw of Prim, I would not have volunteered as tribute for her. I would have just let her go.
But I think you need to keep in mind that the person who was like, I couldn't possibly let her go, was Katniss.
It was Katniss.
Who's right. Possibly even more of a vacuum of personality.
Yeah, true.
Like, Prim showed emotion.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So she had that going for her.
I thought that the actress who played Prim did a great job with being given not too much. Also, the name, I'm wondering, like, if Suzanne Collins had, like, if she's released any, like, insight into her naming conventions. Because naming a little girl Prim seems weirdly pointed. And I don't know.
It's short for Primrose, I think.
Yeah, that doesn't do much for me.
It's a shortcut to get to Prim, though, for sure.
Yeah. Anyways.
So her best friend is Gail. That's Liam Hemsworth's character.
It's Chris Fleming.
I'm
kidding.
Oh, I get it. And the two of them talk about how fucked up the Hunger Games are and how they should just leave. Mm-hmm. And then Katniss and Prim go to the reaping. And Effie Trinket is there. That's Elizabeth Banks' character.
Oh, okay. Really quick.
What?
Elizabeth,
what could this possibly be?
I like Elizabeth Banks. Mm-hmm. I do not like her in this part at all. I think she's doing a terrible Helena Bonham Carter impression. How many times did Helena Bonham Carter turn this part down? And then how many times did Parker Posey turn it down after, before they arrived at letting Elizabeth Banks do a terrible impression of both of them? It bothers me. I don't like it.
I was fine on her performance. I thought she was like a 7 out of 10 performance wise.
Wow. That's
until
really
you mentioned Helena Bonham Carter, and I was like, oh,
that's so
three. That's what it is. Three. Now it's three.
She simply wasn't available
because Helena would have killed it.
That's like a role she was born to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's her in 80% of her film career.
Yes. Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah. Anyway. They needed somebody who can actually play like out of it.
Yeah, because her character is not that forever.
Elizabeth Banks isn't really a character actor that way.
She was trying something.
I appreciated the effort. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it did make me just wonder, what if Parker Posey had gotten... She seems to be available. Mm.
She was doing Parker Posey's character from Josie and the Pussycats.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that is exactly what she was doing.
Elizabeth Banks, we see
Let's
you.
Let's go be girls.
Oh, God.
Great movie. Anyway. Anyways. So Effie Trinket is from the Capitol. She, like, represents the Hunger Games, essentially. Or, like, she represents District 12 for
is
the...
Is she a liaison? What is she? Yeah,
she's a liaison in some way.
She is the District 12 Hunger Games, like... reaping like representative.
Right. She's by far the most dystopian looking of everyone besides Stanley Tucci. Oh, she and Stanley Tucci are the only ones delivering looks quite that dystopian.
Yeah.
And then you've got Guy Fieri beard, and then everyone else kind of looks normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And but except for like the non-speaking extras that will like occasionally
who are like you're like
well, yeah, everyone in the Capitol.
But people who is yeah. The speaking roles, though.
Right. Sure. Anyways, okay. So for we're at the reaping. For the girls, Prim gets selected to participate in the games, but Katniss can't bear to see her little sister compete. Mm-hmm. So she volunteers as tribute in an iconic scene. And then
it goes like this. I volunteer. I volunteer as tribute.
And then like and lots like, of shaky camera work, which urgent, it's really good. Scary. Yes. I liked this part. I thought this, I was a little bit moved by it.
Sure.
I like the parts with her and her family. I wish there was more of that and less PETA.
Oh, PETA.
Speaking of, PETA gets selected for the boys. Mm-hmm. And that's Josh Hutcherson's character. So Katniss and PETA. Hutcherson?
If you had asked me, thought it was I would have bet $10 million it was Hutcherson.
Yeah, did I say it wrong? I might have said it wrong.
No, I think you're right. I think it is Hutcherson.
I feel like Jamie would definitely know since she had a sexual awakening.
As a former Stan, it is Josh Hutcherson, and that is how it's spelled in Firehouse Dog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they go and meet their mentor, Haymitch, which is Woody Harrelson.
And his $4 wig. Feminist icon Woody Harrelson's wig. Yeah. Yes. Middle part, $4. Yeah,
the most and least.
I liked Woody Harrelson in this movie. The wig was wild. I didn't see. There's a lot of wigs in this movie, and this is...
Also, it was like an anime cosplay wig. I don't know what was happening with it. It was very bad. It was like PC.
Could not keep dry.
It was why, like, just blow some wind on him. I don't understand why. It was constantly wet and PC. It was so bad.
I like that they're like, he's an alcoholic. Therefore, he has a dirty wig on all the time. I'm like, this leap of logic doesn't quite make sense. Right. But sure, visual language.
Meanwhile, the costume designer is like, look, I know it's kind of cliche, but I'm just going to go with the cheap wig because he's an alcoholic. It's just like a shortcut of storytelling.
Like, you know, like the collar's undone and the wig's wet.
Yeah. Yeah, every alcoholic I've ever known has a soaking wet wig, and that's a dead giveaway that you need help.
So he's a previous like victor of the games, which is why he's helping them. But he doesn't really have much interest in helping him. The main thing that he tells Katniss is that she needs to be more likable so that she'll get sponsors who will send her stuff during the games to help her survive.
Yep. Which at least is framed as a bad thing because you don't want to hear that from someone wearing a soaking wet wig.
I know. Yeah. Likeable, really?
Right. I appreciate that the movie went out of its way to frame this as like, this is not the right thing to be saying to this character.
Yes. That's important.
Yeah.
So then they get to the Capitol and Katniss meets Cinna. That's Lenny Kravitz.
Oh.
Hot.
I didn't know the cast of this movie outside of Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson and the Hutch. I know that my best friend from high school, Lois, listens to the show, and she went to Firehouse Dog with me, and she is losing her mind right now.
I keep thinking it's like Firehouse Dog.
That's what I keep thinking too, because of the emphasis of how you're saying it. Firehouse Dog.
I'm sorry, I've been saying it for 13 years since it was released. I just can't stop. I have it on DVD. It's the only DVD I own. Anyways.
And I watch it every day.
I love it. I don't have a DVD player, but if I ever get one, I'm ready. What were we even talking? Oh, I just had no idea Lenny Kravitz was in this movie. And what a pleasant surprise.
I know.
Yeah.
Something my boyfriend said was, how many steps did it take in the process to get to casting Lenny Kravitz?
Was he their first
choice?
Yeah.
No idea.
But
I think he adds a je ne sais quoi. I like him in this movie.
Mm-hmm. I think casting Lenny Kravitz, a style icon, as a dystopian stylist rules. I thought it was real fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that too. And I liked his relationship with Katniss.
Mm-hmm. Same. He's one of my favorite characters. Mm-hmm. Him and the Tooch and everyone else.
The Tooch.
Don't really care. Anyway. So.
Feminist icon Caitlin Dorant.
And then it's like, whatever, the rest of the movie.
Right. So he's her stylist. There's a tribute parade that he makes her all fancy and I mean, speaking of firehouse dog, it's more like firehouse.
Were you freaking girl out when he was on fire with her?
On that fire.
Was, yeah. I mean, I was like, this is Josh Hutcherson canon.
The boy on fire.
Like, they start calling her that weird stuff. Yeah,
the girl on fire.
Oh, the girl on fire. Was that, that had to have come out after this movie came out, right? Otherwise, you're like, what a weird reference that would have been.
Really into it.
Josh Hutcherson isn't even on the poster for Firehouse Dog. It's just a dog. That's so,
that's really sad.
That's so embarrassing. He's the star of the movie and he's not on the poster. That's funny. It's just a dog in sunglasses.
So there's the parade. Stanley Tucci is Caesar Flickerman, but he's Stanley Tucci. And he's
far
like
wig.
The commentator of like all things wig. Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. We meet the game maker. There's President Snow, who is Donald Sutherland. And
fully expected you to say Snoke.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I forgot. Because of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're all there. And then the tributes, they train a little bit. The tributes from District 1 and 2 are always, like, really, really good because they, like, go to, like, training camp and there it's a whole thing. There's, like, a whole class discussion we can have there. And PETA is worried that he's going to die because he sucks at everything, except that he's strong and he can throw heavy objects around.
It's just like, Josh Hutcherson is not strong. How dare you try this movie?
Why are you trying?
It was crazy.
It is so weird that they're like, he's so strong. I'm like, stop gaslighting me. I'm looking at him.
And when she's like, you should throw that big ball. He like walks over to it. I was like, he's gonna die.
It. You're
he's
like, die. His arm's gonna fall off.
But they don't show him throwing it because he couldn't make it.
But like, they have that whole scene where PETA tells this story about how like, he's like, no, like, even my own mother knows that, like, you're going to win, Katniss. And she goes, well, you're, like, really good at throwing flour.
She's like, I've seen you do it many times.
It's like a baker's son superpower that he has.
He has two superpowers, both baking related.
Yeah. Yes. Cake decorating and throwing flour.
I'm like, does Suzanne Collins understand bakeries? Has she ever met a poor person? I have a lot of questions based on her portrayal. I love short men, and I love when short men are cast in leading roles. And it's like, or shorter. I don't know his exact height. I think it's around 5'7", if I remember correctly, from my Firehouse Dog days.
Mm. Boy short, aka girl tall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. But I like when they don't Tom Cruise it, and the movie is like, no, he's shorter than her, and we're not going to call attention to it.
I liked that.
That said, he visibly could not be that strong.
Well, I mean, he has some arms.
He's got thick arms. He's bad. Got muscle.
But like, his little t-shirt was like tight
balance
on his arm. No, I
wasn't going to support that.
I was very worried about the ball throwing. And you do notice too that they show a lot of cut twos, the like flashbacks of like him throwing a piece of bread at her.
Yeah.
Honestly, I believe that Josh Hutcherson would have gotten too into CrossFit to get ready for this movie. He kind of has the resting face of someone who is too into CrossFit.
He does.
Yeah. And CrossFit resting face.
They never show him throwing those 100-pound bags of flour around.
No.
It's like, listen, Jen's shooting the arrows.
Throw the iron ball, sir.
So like at this, we are maybe to believe that at the same time Katniss is hunting that deer that Gale totally fucks up.
Yeah.
He is somewhere just like lifting bags of flour. Like in his version of the movie, that's what's taking place.
A lot of theories.
Yeah. All right. We meet Rue. She is a younger kid from District 11, I think.
Yes.
I think it's 11. Katniss, she's impressing the judges with how good she is with the bow and arrow. She gets a score of 11 because they're like rating all the tributes, and she gets the highest score. So
she's a bitch.
Because she throws an arrow at them.
And every time Katniss gets a great score, PETA is extremely emasculated and retaliates. And that's why he's the romantic lead of the movie.
Whoops. So it's the night before the Hunger Games, and all the tributes do a TV interview. And PETA, during his interview, says that he is in love with someone who came to the games with him.
I hate this.
Yes.
So much.
We'll talk all about this.
It's like when the people on The Bachelorette say they're in love with her in the first episode. I'm like, falling. Just want attention.
I'm like, you're not falling. Stop.
Or if you are, it's because they've given you too much liquor and not enough food.
Yeah.
It's a Hunger Games of its own type.
I mean, we know there was booze because Haymitch is drinking a lot of it.
Very demonstrative.
I mean, there's enough to dip his wig in it.
That's why.
That's why it's wet.
That's why.
He's or pouring it's from all the like, on it.
Like liquor sweats.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Constant.
Yes, the liquor sweats.
You know. So we all know.
Now it's time for the games. Let the games begin.
Scary.
Both of you at the same time. Yeah.
And right away, like, half of the tributes are killed.
This is the part of the movie
convenient.
Where everyone would have died. I was like, I would, as they were standing around, I was like trying to put myself in the position. I'm like, no, I think at this point I would have been like, well, I had a good run. It's always nice that, like, this will be on my IMDb page. Mm-hmm. And it might kind of be like The Crow. And I had a good
Yeah. So Katniss survives and runs into the woods, and then she learns that PETA is alive too and pretending to be an ally to the District 1 and 2 people, and they are using him to try to find Katniss because they want to kill her.
Right.
She continues to survive. She escapes a fire. The bad guys find her. They chase her up a tree, and then she drops a wasp's nest on them, which her
Deus
friend Rue...
Wasp's nest.
Yes.
And her friend Rue had been the one to like alert her to the presence of the nest. So Rue is her ally.
They're also LSD wasps.
Yes.
Which like Stanley Tucci kind of pops in sometimes like over the loudspeaker like a vice principal and just like gives you exposition. He's like, by the way, there's LSD in the wasp. But you're like, okay.
Right, because he's the host of the reality show that everyone's watching from home.
He's Jeff Probsting it. He's like live narrating what is happening during the challenge.
It's also kind of like he's doing the post show talk show while it is still happening.
Yeah.
Right.
This is like the talking games.
Dead. Yeah.
The Talking Dead.
That's where that show got its name.
Yeah.
Talking about who died. That's so horrible.
Also, Toby Jones is there with him. Barely.
Oh, right.
Like, how do you underutilize Toby Jones?
Right. He's like the...
He doesn't speak.
But, like, he responds like two sentences, maybe. He's like, blah, 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 Tracker Jackers or whatever they're called. And Toby Jones is on the left looking like a weird Mozart. Yeah. And he's like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he literally is just like, you got that right. That's it.
Sounds like a good part. I would play the shit out of that part. Like, you got that right.
Yeah, I would be, like, moving a lot.
If that's your one line, I would be really gesticulating.
Like, I got, like, 2 seconds on camera. I'm going to make it work. Like,
listen, I'm getting my SAG card for this. Yeah. You're going to see it.
Yeah.
Okay, so then Katniss finally gets her hands on a bow and arrow, and she and Rue have, like, formed this alliance, and they destroy the supplies that like all the bad guys from District 1 and 2 are hoarding.
Shoot the fruit.
But then Rue gets killed.
Yes.
And Katniss cries. This incites some riots in District 12. District 11. And an announcement is then made that they will crown two victors in the Hunger Games if they originate from the same district. So then Katniss goes and finds PETA.
Who has disguised himself as
a rock. Yeah, no. It is so weird what he looks like.
Where did he get that stuff?
I don't know.
It happened to be in his pack. He had a cake decorating kit.
That was the moment that shook me like the second most after Helvetica Font was like, she found him disguised as a rock and she's like, you know what? I think I am in love with him. You're like, in the next scene, she kisses him. I was like, what? This is what?
I know.
Oh, no.
Why? Kink shame.
That was part of the act.
Yeah.
He wandered onto set of Nailed It and was just like, I've got all the stuff. I'm going to paint my face.
And they were like, actually, you did. You nailed it. You look like
you
a rock.
You nailed it.
He
you
did really it. Look like a rock. He 10 out of 10 rock painting. He did look.
I was like, are there mirrors in this? Like, how did he know? It's so
what was painting what?
Also, he has like an infectious cut on his.
Yes.
Also, I laughed out loud when he's like, hello.
Pops out of, you know, rock. When your man's is disguised as a rock and has a critical wound. Like,
he's unwell.
He's like, am I winning?
He, at that point, I'm like, he should be dead. He should not be alive.
He's close, but yeah. She gets him to safety, and then they kiss. Mm-hmm. We'll talk all about this. And then everyone's rooting for them to make it. So, and then they're like, okay, we're the only team left with just the two of us still alive from the same district. We can win this together. And then at this point, there's only one other tribute left, which is Cato.
The guy with the flesh-colored hair.
Yes.
Cato. Oh, yeah. He looked like a thumb.
Mm-hmm. OJ's house guest.
Yeah.
They fight him. They kill him. And then just then, there's another announcement that says, just kidding, there can be only one winner. So PETA is like, Katniss, kill me. And she's like, no, let's both die. So they're about to eat these poison berries. And then the announcer comes back and is like, wait, stop. Don't do that. You both win. So they're announced to be the victors of the Hunger Games. Yeah. And then they go back to the Capitol. They have like post-show interviews and they have
to make her dress up like Belle.
Oh, yeah.
You're just like, yeah. Interesting. Okay.
And Haymitch is like, you pissed them off by like doing this whole double victory mm-hmm. thing. So now you have to pretend like you're really in love with PETA because everyone's just going to gobble that up.
Right.
They do that. And then that's the end of the movie. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come right back to discuss.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step, and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Oh, God.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Well, where to start? There's so much to talk about with this film.
I feel like, okay, so this movie is like often cited when people are talking about movies with strong female protagonists.
Sure.
Because you do get to see, you know, a young woman who has a lot of agency. She has skills. The stakes are high. The series becomes about her being like a symbol for the revolution. Like it's a whole
and it's thing. A female-led action franchise, which yes. is cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Indeed. But there are some things that I wish wouldn't have happened.
The romantic subplot in its entirety by any chance?
Yes, the big thing.
Hated it.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, and I wonder how much of this was supposed to inspire like dread. Because for me, I was like, oh no, she's like being told that she has to fake this relationship with this guy. I don't like that she kind of seemed to like him back.
That was a
toward
thing.
The end.
Yeah. Because what I would have liked was for her to like not really know how much of it he's faking, because he is more duplicitous than she thinks.
Yeah.
Like she has seen that he knows how to play the game. Yeah. So
I disagree.
Oh,
I don't think he is at all duplicitous. I think he
really?
Was going to the other side purely to save her
life. No, not for that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, like, he knows how to play this game, so he is faking being in love with her. I mean, maybe he likes her, but I think, because we see from the next movies that he
like, fully is in love with her.
I think it's a little bit of both.
Super.
I think okay, it's
so. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, he's like fully in love with her.
But also, I mean, I think you're right too in that, like, you see in that moment in the parade when they're on the chariots,
yeah.
like he goes to surprise, not kiss, but grab her hand.
Yeah, and she pulls
and she
away.
Pulls away, and he's like, "No, come on, they'll love it."
And they
and then,
do.
So she's like, "Okay." So then they hold hands, and then people are like,
"We love it."
I was a little confused about like the same debate of mm-hmm. like because. At first, it does seem like I was assuming that he was very calculated in the ways, especially because of the whole, like, it felt like the first episode of The Bachelor where he goes on, he doesn't mm-hmm. tell her that he likes her. He tells the entire
yeah.
world in this very performative
yeah.
way. And mm-hmm. I was like, that seems calculated. Like, that mm-hmm. seems like some, you know, something that just to like gain attention and goodwill. But then they sort of try to spin it at later as if it were actually totally sincere and not calculated at all. And I don't know. I don't hate that the TV show tries to push them together
yeah.
because I feel like there's some commentary there
mm-hmm.
of like the way
yeah that's really like realistic
yeah.
Yeah.
yeah
like
yeah
the way the TV show treats Katniss I think is meant to be like commentary of like when she goes up for her first interview, like Stanley Tucci makes sure she has to show off her outfit and like
mm-hmm.
she
yeah.
has to and when Woody Harrelson advises her on what to do, it's very like reality TV calculated. So I'm like, okay, I'd like that works for me because there's commentary being made and we believe at the time that she doesn't care for this guy at all.
Right.
So there's like some interesting tension. But then I feel like they kind of throw it away by being like, no, they actually do like each other. So
right, because she initiates the
works.
Kiss when they're in
yeah.
in the cave.
Right.
So
but then even then I was just like, is she doing this because she knows
because
it's
she knows
on
they're
TV?
Being on camera?
I don't know.
It's which would be smart.
All of
right.
the above.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
To
my
me.
Interpretation
yeah.
based on the book and the movie
yeah.
together. Because I think what it comes down to is it not working in the movie is casting. They have no chemistry.
They do not have chemistry
whatsoever.
They do not.
And neither of them have very many shades to their performance either. So when he is playing sincere in love with Katniss, it reads exactly the same as when you are supposed to kind of wonder what his mm-hmm. motives are. Because you
That's
are supposed
a good point.
To wonder
yeah.
because she is wondering.
Right.
But then as the book goes on, it's like, no, he was 100% sincere. It is shitty how he announces it, which is not something I even thought about watching mm-hmm. the movie last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's shitty.
No, yeah. Like, and also, I think deep down, maybe he does love her, but he might be like one of those guys that's like doesn't understand to love someone truly is to love them how they want to be loved, and rather he's just like, this is how I express it, and like that's why he announced it, because I think partially he's doing it because he's like, oh, I feel love for her, I should just say it, and then like partially he knows the only thing he's got is knowing how to play the game. Because he, from the beginning they get in there, she's like sulking and he's like, we should wave at them because like you've got to get people to like you.
That and was like an interesting moment for me at least, because you're just like, oh, okay, this is like a, like I almost, like I wish that they, if the tension were constantly from like them doubting like, oh, is this sincere? Exactly. Is this not? How do I actually feel about it? But it like, I don't know. Yeah.
Instead it seems like it's just muddy.
It is muddy.
It is partially a performance thing.
And then setting aside their like lack of chemistry, if we just take it like the events of the story at face value, what happens is that the more the movie progresses, the more this romantic storyline gets entangled into the main story, which is their survival, which I feel is really unnecessary. Like, they made a conscious choice because it's like, all right, this is a YA book. This is, you know, a movie franchise for largely like teen, young adult audiences. Mm-hmm. So we've got to wedge this, not only a romantic storyline into here, but it's a love triangle storyline.
Gotta be a triangle, right?
Because Gail
Lil Helmsworth.
Otherwise, why lonely do I care? Hemsworth.
Yeah,
because in this first movie, and I wonder if the book makes this more clear or not. I can't totally remember, but Gail and Katniss are framed as being best friends, and there's no reason to assume that they have anything besides a platonic friendship,
apart from being very attractive.
Apart from both being near each other and both hot.
Yes.
But then when Gale is watching the Hunger Games from his TV or wherever
at
it's
the bar
projected.
He's like at a bar.
At the Hunger Games bar.
He's seeing Katniss and Peeta kiss on TV and he's like visibly upset.
Very
so we're
upset.
Supposed to understand like, oh no, he's also in love with Katniss, because in a YA novel and movie, sure, a woman gets to be the main character sometimes, but if she is, she's got to have not one, but two boys who love her.
Which is like, both adds nothing to, well, I mean, it's, I feel like it's supposed to add stuff to the story, but there's just multiple elements of this movie. And I think this is like the most sinister one. Also introducing daddy issues 90 minutes into the movie, I also found to be very unnecessary.
I forgot that that
was
part of
part?
It.
I don't remember.
She's like hallucinating after getting bitten by the Jagger
Jackers. With the mom and the dad being dead and stuff.
Right. Yes. I feel like it's like there's too many crutches involving male characters when it's like, this movie does not want for stakes. The stakes are high enough the whole movie. Yeah. And like adding in this like love story that doesn't work really, and then throwing in some daddy issues on top of it. It's like, we are like, Katniss is already in trouble, and the daddy stuff doesn't really pay off at all, except in like a passing comment to her mom. And I don't know, like there was just most of the like adding a problem on top of a problem that was already life or death. It's like, it's just like, this is just not necessary.
But also, like, it's also interesting in how they show, like, they introduce these like daddy issues, is because what it actually comes down to is it becomes an issue she has with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't think about her dad that much. What happened is her dad died and the mom shut down emotionally, and she had to take care of herself, and she had to take care of Prim. So it's actually a mommy issue, but it doesn't really present that way.
It's weird. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it kind of glorifies, like, the way mothers are presented in this movie it's very limited, but I feel like it is telling, where it seems like we're supposed to assume, because Peeta has a bad, possibly abusive relationship with his mom, that that's why he treats Katniss like shit at first, which is kind of like a one-to-one that I was like, that should, if you're gonna do that, then you have to explore it. You can't just be like, that's why he's shitty to women, so you can like him.
I thought he was like shitty to her because he was embarrassed about being like bonked on the head with a rolling pin. I'm not sure what happened, but he got bonked or whatever. And I think he just was just in a shitty place and like didn't.
I don't want to keep being the
in the book
the person, but again, this is another weakness of the movie. So it's like, on the one hand, it seems like a really good adaptation. And on the other hand, it totally doesn't convey at all what the book version of this was, mm-hmm. which is that he was like really putting himself on the line by throwing her that bread.
You're not supposed to give food to other people in the Hunger Games, right? In those worlds.
I mean, everyone's hungry.
Everyone's brave. So hungry. And yeah. So it's hard to be hungry.
So what was he doing? You're allowed to throw bread at pigs but not at people?
It was like that bread was to feed their pigs that they need to survive, I think.
Right.
He's like really risking a beating by even throwing her some bread. And she remembers this. So when he steps up on stage, at least in the book, she's like, it's kind of the sense, maybe I'm remembering this wrong. That would be amazing if I'm remembering this wrong. but when he steps up on stage, she's like, oh no, the only other person who's been nice to me my whole life. Like, I don't want it to be him.
It does not read like that in the movie.
He like gave me bread once.
Oh, I read it as she was like, ugh, you threw bread at me.
No, like, she's like, you sad that it's PETA.
I did not see that in the movie. In the movie, it seemed like she was like, you threw bread at me. You think you're better than me. And like, you saw me at my like worst when I was like hungry and leaning on a tree in the rain.
Also, she does not seem bad off. It seems like she was like, yeah, I was just like having a nice day out in the rain.
Those flashbacks are badly done.
Very bad. Yeah, and confusing. Like, it's right. Like none of us, I feel like we all had different takeaways from them. I'm so disinterested in their romantic connection that I like, honestly, wasn't even paying that close attention.
So is Katniss. Like, yeah. She's busy. Interested in him. Yeah. She's got fish to fry, like, not dying.
She's too hungry to be in love.
Also, this is what I think about a lot in these types of, like, love triangle stories, where it's like, okay, you've got her best friend Gail is apparently in love with her. This guy PETA is apparently in love with her. But, like, what if Katniss was a lesbian?
Yeah. Like, because she could have just been like, sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's like, she's not because of heteronormativity in media, but, like, where's the story where she's just like,
believe that character?
I would like Katniss so much better if she was queer. But yeah,
it's just all the romantic stuff. I feel like it's just really overdone and like not necessary. And I would love for the movie to have been 15 minutes shorter. So they could just cut it out. Yeah. I'd be fine with it.
I agree now as an adult, but if I was reading this then, I'd like, all I wanted at 13 was for two boys to be in love with me at the same time. It would be like, oh, like my God, dream come true.
That was my dream.
And so if I was reading this book, I'd be like, yes, two boys are in love with her. Yeah. And I am her.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why she's so boring, because we talk about this sometimes where there will be a boring. I mean, this can be applied to any gender, but there will be like a boring main character, especially in like YA and teen fiction, where it allows, you know, the young person who's reading it or consuming it in whatever way to plug themselves into that character.
Yeah. That's for sure what she is.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah. Which is, you know, and you don't, I guess maybe that was why I was a little thrown by it, because normally they're not female protagonists that get this boring plug-in treatment, because it's usually like you're getting a Harry Potter or you're getting a Neo or you're getting just like a bland dude. But I guess, just kidding. This is progressive.
The
pendulum has to swing.
I like romance both as a genre and as like a thing in other movies, and I like a love triangle. I did not like this one because I think it was poorly done. Like, there weren't any seeds that the best friend and her were like a thing, and so when he was like, oh, I can't watch you in the bar, I was like, what?
Right,
why? Yeah. I was like, oh, you like her? Like, okay.
It's confusing.
And then I think that's another thing where it's like, oh, I guess deep down I just like always assumed we'd end up together.
Which is like, ew.
Like, right.
Like, it's like, what? You guys don't even seem to like each other.
Seriously.
Until you cosplayed as a rock and then all of a sudden she's in love
with you. When he does that cosplay as a rock and she's like, oh my God, like, let me drag you into this cave and like
And he's like, oh, I have to paint myself as this cave now. And she's like, put it down.
She's like, relax. Stop. For once, just be PETA.
You're delusional.
I'm just Katniss, and you're just PETA.
Can you imagine how many Instagram followers PETA would have had, though, if he could have just painted himself like various surfaces? Like, so he would have been insanely popular.
So many sponsors. Yeah. So many parachutes. Easily.
He would have got, he would have been an influencer. That's, we've got to go to another break, but to wrap up on the relationship, I guess it makes sense in a YA thing. I think it could have been more thoughtfully adapted, and
but
I didn't
like it. But then
it's
also like, because the love triangle or just like a romantic storyline is so pervasive in YA fiction, it's just like, can we have one where there's not? And I'm sure there are, and you know, it's been several years, over a decade since these books were published, so I'm sure I haven't read much YA fiction since then, but it's just like, can't we just have a story about like a badass young woman like doing cool stuff and not kissing boys?
I'm mostly compelled by like PETA and Katniss's relationship as like them faking a relationship
like
to please the masses, and then actually either not liking each other or like working together and realizing like we have to fake this for reality TV, and then we're full fucking burn the world down,
and then it turns into
like
the Americans.
That's
what it is.
Like exploring that like expectation of YA fiction and faking it and having the reader know that, like I think that's would
a
be cool.
That's really much
cool.
Better story.
Yeah. Really cool, and the stakes are very high because each of them could be holding that kind of as like both a carrot and stick, as like,
because
you better do what I need you to do, because otherwise I could just tell everyone that like we don't like
each
other.
Or if like the powers that be find out that they're faking it, then they'll, you know, be mad.
They'll be mad.
They'll be so mad.
We have punch ups.
Yeah.
Suzanne. And with that, we're gonna go to a break. We'll be right back.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I think this might be a good transition into, there's been a lot of discussion surrounding race in this movie.
Yes.
And as always, we want to open everything up to our listeners who may have info and insights that we don't. But there were two main subjects that I found in the coverage of in 2012 when this movie was coming out. There was...
It's very upsetting.
Yeah. The first thing was Katniss as being a whitewashed role by Jennifer Lawrence having been cast. Fans of the book, I mean, it's, this is a little trickier to discuss, but it does seem like to an extent there is something to that, because in the books, she's described as having olive skin and straight black hair, which leaves it to open to interpretation.
Sure.
But Jennifer Lawrence is not.
She does not have olive skin, nor does she have straight black hair.
No. And whatever race Suzanne Collins was trying to imply, it doesn't seem like was reflected in the casting at all, which was sort of a discussion around then, but it didn't seem to, for fans at this time, disqualify her. I know. It's so weird. It was 7 years ago.
2012 was a different time.
People barely gave
before
a fuck.
Ghost in the Shell.
So that's worth discussing. And also the fact that Suzanne Collins didn't overrule it, because she was very integral in the making of this movie, and she had the power
to... Right. She's one of the producers. She's one of the writers of the script.
I can imagine, because it's not like she was coming off of another very successful franchise. I can imagine a situation in which she fought for that and just could not,
was overruled,
get them to budge on it.
I could say, I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate, and it seems like this was like a very hot time for Jennifer Lawrence. I think she was like coming off of Winter's Bone.
She had just come off of that. Yeah,
so she was coming off of, like, it makes sense that this would be the time to cast her in a huge franchise, but that was a subject of discussion, and it seems like some fans were pretty upset that she had been cast, because that happens all the time. And then the other main subject of discussion that I think has changed quite a bit since the movie came out is the discussion around the black characters in the movie, particularly Rue. There was a lot of, to the point where there is an in-depth New Yorker essay written about it.
I read it.
About fan backlash when black actors were cast as these parts, that it is worth saying they were written as black characters.
Yeah, that was wild. Watching that happen,
I wasn't aware,
like,
of
you
this.
Guys,
yeah, I remember
just
this.
Like, actually, like, just very dumb.
So
you're reading this book and you're like, this character is white.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, so basically there was a bunch of racist shitheads on mostly Twitter, I think, but kind of just
where they
across.
Thrive.
Where they thrive, being so upset that Rue was black.
I remember this.
And yeah, so the article that we referenced from the New Yorker is called White Until Proven Black, Imagining Race in Hunger Games by Anna Holmes. At least that's the one I read. So check that out, because it provides some good insight about that.
Yeah, but it gives like the full, like, scope of fan, like, someone who scouted out, like, all the racist tweets made around it. There were let me read one directly just to give you the idea of what it was like. I mean, basically, it was just tweets that said, first of all, that they were surprised that they had cast a black actress to play Rue, and second, that they felt less bad when a black woman was killed than if a white woman was killed. So just a lot of really hideous biases that have absolutely everything to do with the person making the comment, because if they, you know, and I think it's a lot of toxic fandom stuff of like, oh, it should have stuck to the book, but it's like, well, then you didn't read the book, because it was always written as a black character. And
so, and it's nuts that it would be like, you read the book and Katniss is like not white ?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And everybody's like, how dare you? And then you cast a very obviously black character to be a black actress. And people were like, oh, she's not white.
And it's really
I read as white.
And then it's also really interesting to look at it in the lens of today, which like I had actually forgotten about that whole controversy with the casting of the character Rue. Mm-hmm. And when I was watching it just with the lens of 2019, I was like, man, just as a whole, it does kind of suck that like a character of color helps this white protagonist and like points out all the things that she should do to survive. She mm-hmm. points out the nest.
Wasp, and she puts like medicinal leaves yeah. on her like wasp bites.
Yeah. And then dies, and then the white character survives. Two white characters right. survive, which is not by any means malicious. It's not anything like that. It just reveals an implicit bias that like people don't know they have, which is like, oh, yeah. well, what's wrong with that? They were, it shows that the black character was smarter, and it's like, yeah, but the winner.
To have the only girl who's a person of color in the entire yeah. movie be killed. Yeah.
I mean, she's really only involved in the movie in a meaningful way for maybe 20 minutes.
And through the lens of how does it affect our main character?
Right.
Right.
Which yeah. I know this is not an ensemble film and that literally everyone dies except for two people.
Right.
But it's still, there is still, I think, that kind
it's
of
not a good look.
It's well, just yeah, it's just kind of
I mean
stinks.
The cast is still predominantly white when you consider Elizabeth Banks, Woody Harrelson,
mm-hmm. oh for sure,
Stanley Tucci, like the Game Maker, the President Snow, like most of the people are white with the exception of Lenny Kravitz mm-hmm. and some extras you see who live in District 11, which is apparently right. the only place where black people black. Live.
Yeah. It's so bizarre. I mean, it's, and again, it seems like that is, it obviously is a Hollywood problem, but from what I could find about the book series is that the books were written to be far more diverse. Mm-hmm. It's like implied that they're like most people are mixed race at this point so far in the mm-hmm. future.
Which they would be. Yes.
Right. It makes sense. But it's still cast as like an extremely white cast.
Yeah. And if they hadn't done that, Rue's death would not have
been so
rubbed us the wrong
yeah,
way.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But also, we can all agree that the relationship between Rue and Katniss is very compelling.
It's very cute.
Whereas
I
she has
it.
Like no chemistry with anyone else.
Yeah. My favorite.
Barely her sister.
The actress who plays Rue, Amanda Stenberg, I think I'm saying that right. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah, Amanda Stenberg.
I have some cool quotes from her reflecting on this role. But my favorite example of like how that is the most compelling relationship in the movie is that Amanda Stenberg and Jennifer Lawrence won the Teen Choice Award for Best Chemistry that year.
Awesome.
It's just like, fuck Josh Hutcherson. Yeah. Like, apparently all the teens felt that way.
Yeah.
So just a few words from Amanda Stenberg, who, mm-hmm. I wasn't following her social media or her like activism very closely before I stumbled across this, but she, and she's also non-binary. She goes by she, her, and they, them,
oh, cool.
But predominantly she, her. Came out in 2016. Like she's really cool. She's really cool. And so she did this interview last year when she was promoting a movie that I don't think was super well received, but it was called The Darkest Minds. And it was a sci-fi movie that she was the lead of. So she was reflecting on The Hunger Games and some of her thoughts. Quote, it does feel really special to have begun my career with The Hunger Games and to be in a place now where I can be cast in the lead of this sort of thing. I don't know that would have been possible at the same time in the same way, she continued, noting that it's only recently that Hollywood and audiences alike have begun to see the effects of big pushes for on-screen diversity. And then she comments on how she viewed the racist backlash against her character, because she's only like 12 or 13
she's
when this
so
movie.
Little to have to deal with that.
Yeah. She reflects on it now. And says, quote, there was resistance to having black girls in films and that black women are dehumanized and their lives are seen as less valuable than white lives. This is from a BuzzFeed interview, by the way. She remembers that one of the main complaints was that Rue's death became less sad to some viewers when they saw her as a black girl. Quote, while it was hurtful when I was 12, it wasn't shocking. The irony of the whole situation was that Rue was one of the only characters I could find in the content I loved that was literally written as black. So that's her thoughts. She's really cool. She is like also a major, she speaks out about colorism in Hollywood a lot. She turned down a role in Black Panther because she felt that the role should have gone to a darker skinned actor. She's just
tight.
She's really cool. So check her out and support all of her stuff.
Amazing. Also, speaking of non-binary, it made me wonder because like, yes, they say like a girl and a boy is selected from each district. And it's like, okay, does that mean like non-binary, genderqueer, and like intersex people are off the hook?
I was about to say, I'm like, maybe this could be spun as good.
Yeah. You silly goose. Absolutely not.
But yeah, just to wrap up on the conversation about race, like there's black people in District 11. There's some black people in the Capitol, but like, in Pan Am, there are no Asian people. Yeah, there are no like Latinx people. Yeah. I think there might be one, maybe two Asian tributes, but the movie could not care less about those characters. Yeah. Like they die immediately. Like it's just such a weirdly predominantly white cast for a movie that takes place in a world where people would be much browner.
Well, I was going to say, perhaps I can provide some perspective, having been alive in 2012. Like, wow, what the world was incredible like then, it's like we just didn't know. Like, we were raised a certain way with certain ideas about race and gender. So, like, you guys might not understand, but in 2012, it just was different. Explain. It was
different.
We're
all 6 years old.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So, just keep that in mind. It was a very long time ago.
Also, this director, I mean, I don't know how involved Gary Ross was in the creative writing decisions of this movie, but you know, he doesn't have a great track record on race. He's also directed Pleasantville, so there you go.
Whoopsies.
So much diversity.
I know.
Black and white.
That movie was black and white. So I take it back.
And then it had a lot of color at the end.
One of our most beloved episodes.
Yes.
Anyway, so there was like a scene where Katniss is trying to impress the judges. It's at the end of the day. It's like mostly older white men who are like observing, and like no one's paying attention to her at this point. So she like has to do this like drastic thing where she like fires the arrow like right near them. And it just reminded me of an all too familiar situation where women are not taken as seriously as other people, namely straight white men, and she has to like work much harder to like garner the same respect that someone like the Cato character just like comes with, that privilege of like being respected immediately.
I feel like that at least is one of the things that was effectively commented on in the movie, at least.
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple other things that I enjoyed too about the movie where this is a rare occurrence, but you get to see a woman using real weapons when the situation warrants it. Because we talk all the time about how in movies, if a woman has to fight, she's given a frying pan to bonk on a guy's head.
Just, just lady things. Just
like lady kitchen weapons. Appliances and, you know, stuff like
rolling
that.
Yeah,
this is a pervasive trope.
Yikes.
So the fact that she, we see, I mean, we see her.
Lots of weapons. Lots of weapons in this.
Yes.
And she makes them herself.
She makes some herself. She's got a knife. She's got a bow and arrow. We get to see a woman do things that we rarely get to see a woman do in movies, which is stuff like hunt, use tools, climb trees.
Wrap a little rope around your legs so you can sleep on a tree.
Yeah.
Be better than her male counterpart at all of those.
Oh my
right.
And except for cake decorating.
Well,
he's given a traditionally what I would say is a feminine skill, which is like cake decorating.
And really, like cooking and really elaborate makeup.
And being weaker.
Yeah. It's true. And being shrill. Honestly, I find PETA to be shrill.
He was shrill.
I just wish he would calm down.
Yeah, no,
he's
seriously
hysterical.
Emotional.
He's hysterical the entire
time. He did
movie.
Mention his hair at the top of the show. He also suffers from a wet hair issue.
Yes.
Very bad wet hair.
Oh, yeah. Bad hair.
Bad hair.
PETA.
Sometimes I wonder, I'm just like, maybe it's just that Jennifer Lawrence has perfect hair because that's where all the hair budget went.
Right.
Yeah.
That, yeah, her wigs were too good and then everyone else's wigs suffer. I mean, but like female protagonists need to look clean. Right. She barely looks.
I mean, there is a makeover scene.
Is too cute in District 12.
Oh,
I was like, I would
wear
like
blue, Wendy blue dress.
Yeah, her kicky boots.
Oh, her little leather jacket. Her leather jacket that she got from H&M. What was that?
It was very,
why is it?
I liked the jacket.
It was cute.
Too cute.
I have almost all of those articles of clothing. I considered like showing up and cosplaying as Katniss.
Wait, you do have that jacket? I was like, I've seen that jacket.
Yeah, I've got it. I've got boots that are similar. I've got the jeans. I don't know. But anyway,
honestly, I didn't buy that they were poor. Her clothes were cute.
Exactly. I do not feel sorry for her.
No.
Where is she shopping?
I know.
Caitlin, then, you just mentioned the makeover. That was one of the things I actually did like. Because I feel like, again, the movie frames the makeover as unnecessary and wrong.
Yes.
I feel like there was commentary there.
Right. Because, again, there's like this whole ongoing theme throughout the movie where everyone's telling her, Katniss, you need to be more likable. Oh, by PETA saying that he has a crush on you, that makes you seem desirable, which is good. Mm-hmm. I feel like the movie maybe could have done a little bit more to suggest that that was a bad stance to take. But I think I would say it does enough. But I think that maybe for like younger viewers, it was perhaps too subtle for like preteens to maybe pick up on that.
100%.
Yeah.
But so it could all have been the author's intent.
Maybe.
To comment on like she is great at what she does. She isn't like likable, but she can win these games on her own. But the only way she's going to get outside help is if she seems like softened by somebody being in love with her.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I think that was parts of the movie that I totally agree now that you mentioned it, that it was, if I was like 13 seeing this movie, would I have picked up on that?
Yeah, I don't think I would have.
Oh, God. Absolutely. I barely picked up on it yesterday.
Well, and
you guys have provided a lot of insight.
Well, like at the end, too, what I really liked at the end, at least for me as an adult woman, was how scary the end was. Because like it was very like, uh-oh, girl, what'd you get yourself into?
She's trapped.
And when he grabs her hand and pulls it up, like that, and like the weird fakey like interview part where she's like, I just, you know,
I couldn't imagine my life without him.
Like, I think me now, I'm like, dang, okay, that's like, I get it.
Also commentary.
But as a 13-year-old, I would have been like,
like, wow, God, they're so in love.
Yeah,
right.
Like, idiot.
I wouldn't have picked up on like the whole like aesthetic thing, like, and how she's made to be cute, and how and how Stanley Tucci's like, show us your dress. I would have been like, wow, awesome dress. Like, it wasn't clear enough. You're right that doing that, even though it's like as an adult that watches movies exclusively this way, I picked up on it.
Right,
but that's, you know,
yeah,
that's
we're watching it
fair.
Through the lens that we've trained ourselves to watch.
We're
it
looking for
through.
It.
Also, does Stanley Tucci play the same character in this movie as he does in The Devil Wears Prada?
Yes.
Question. Yes. Answer. Yes.
The answer is yes.
Stanley Tucci.
Yes, 1,000 times yes.
I love the Tucci, but I do think that Alan Cumming could have played this just as well, and that Alfred Molina could have played it just as well.
Yeah. Alfred Molina. Interesting.
Interesting. I mean, Alfred Molina is our best friend.
I'm biased because we're very close.
I mean, he's great,
but
I just wouldn't have gone there first, and it's a real crime that I wouldn't.
A lot of people make that mistake.
Yes, yeah. Really good.
A lot of people make the mistake of not going to Alfred Molina first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's available to do podcasts, so he can be in your movie.
I am really growing as a person just talking to you guys right
you're
now.
Welcome.
It's amazing.
That's the true mission of this podcast, is to get Alfred Molina cast in more roles.
Just to go back to the weapons discussion very quickly.
Yes.
According to a study from the Gina Davis Institute.
Ever heard of her?
which does a lot of great work.
Fellow Mensa member Gina yes. Davis.
And Olympic Archer, which is what this is about.
Oh, wow. Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Institute conducted a study that concluded that 7 in 10 girls who had taken up archery say that Katniss from The Hunger Games and Princess Merida from Pixar's Brave influenced their decision to take up archery.
That's great.
That's cool. And that makes perfect sense. I buy it because I want to do it too.
Right. I mean, and it shows something that we talk about a lot, which is that representation matters. And this study is specifically about archery, but similar studies have been done about like showing women in computer science and other like STEM fields. And showing those women in those roles in media and that influencing girls and young women to pursue careers in those fields right. and stuff like that.
So you just need, I mean,
the more you're represented or the more a specific thing is represented, the more people, especially young people, will think, oh, I can do that too.
Female ghost busting has gone up 900% since 2016. No, but that totally, I mean, and that's why we're always like pushing for more movies about like women who are also athletes and stuff yes. like that, because it does make a difference. I think that one of the strengths of this movie is that, so it is based on source material from a female author who also was allowed to adapt her own work for the screen. There's mm-hmm. 3 credited writers, Suzanne Collins, Gary Ross, and a man bafflingly named Billy Ray. Mm. No Cyrus.
Cyrus is not.
Why would you not have a Cyrus on the end?
Yeah, it's like, finish the sentence, yeah. sir.
There. Don't leave me hanging.
But it seems as if, because they're both prolific screenwriters, that they probably had more of a role in just helping Suzanne Collins adapt. But she also has a history of, she was a TV writer. She wrote for Clarissa what? Explains It All.
Oh.
And a number of other, and The Mystery Files of Shelby Wu.
Oh my God, so many female led.
Wow. Yeah. So it is, and it is cool of like, I feel like it's not very common that, especially when there's like, I think that this movie definitely benefited from her adapting it. Like God knows what would have happened if 3 men had adapted this work.
Oh, for real. And how they would have made her too sexy and like it would have grossy,
which is another thing that I wanted.
It'd be real grossy.
It would.
Josie grossy.
And there's also a legendary female producer involved in this, Nina Jacobson, who was one of the only women to head a Hollywood film studio ever. So it seems like there were like women in power who were steering this movie in the right direction. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was, although there is a male cinematographer and a male director, I felt like the way that Jennifer Lawrence, who is very often objectified and in movies, like her body is not made a feast of in this movie.
Yeah, not for a moment.
Yeah. So props to movie for not, you know, just making it about her body. Most of the time she's in full, like,
I mean,
protection.
We talked about Mother! Exclamation point and how that
you're just like, keep us out of your relationship, Aronofsky. I don't want anything to do
but,
with this.
But, yeah, I mean, instead it's just, like, a million, like, very, very tight close-up shots of her face.
And
braids. Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, her braids.
And her braids.
And her braids, yeah.
And her many braids.
I would just like to throw out there real quick that the album that came out that is not the soundtrack, but it's Hunger Games songs from District 12, which are just like a lot of like kind of dark bluegrassy, and it's all that. It's just one album that it's just that over and over. It's really good.
That's so weird.
No, there's this whole album where it's just like inspired by.
Oh, that's cool.
Song, and it's really good. Like cool. Arcade Fire's on there. Nico Case is on there.
Oh, wow.
Well, District 12 must be, it's like coal mining country, so it's like Appalachia, which is like where I grew up. Oh, brag.
Damn.
Nice.
Hashtag proud brag.
Hashtag proud Appalachia.
Just like a quick fire list of last thoughts I had. Haymitch calls Katniss sweetheart no less than like 6 times in the movie. Very annoying. Mm-hmm. He is not a feminist icon.
And I don't think he's framed as one.
No.
Yeah. He's supposed to be obnoxious.
Shout out to the, I don't know if we ever learn her name or what district she's from, but the girl with red hair.
Oh, Double Bun.
Double Bun.
Yes.
That's her character name. There it is.
Who makes it almost all the way to the very end. Loved her. And she's like another type who like doesn't want to kill anyone, but mm-hmm. She's
just trying to outlast.
And that's another thing I wanted to say is that, like, I was kind of worried that because female characters are so often presented in movies as, like, having to be this, like, polite, nice, never would do anything wrong because women are held to a higher standard than men of, like, just being perfect and polite all the time, that, like, Katniss wouldn't kill anybody, that she would, or just, like, maybe passively kill someone, right. But she, like,
oh, she kills
shoots
people.
Yeah. A few she different people.
I was like, does PETA kill anyone? I'm like,
PETA does not kill anyone. Yeah, I don't think
he is too busy painting. He can't.
He is decorating. To be fair, he is. It took him 6 hours to paint himself like a rock. I'm like, he should have been killed in the time it took for him, like, to paint himself.
The only reason he got stabbed was because he wouldn't, like, stop painting himself as a rock when somebody attacked him.
No, it was no. He, so he was fully painted as a rock, and that guy was, like, running and tripped and fell. I was like, oh, yeah.
But he's like.
He's like, keep it together, got me again.
Rocks don't feel pain.
And then rocks. Two last things real quick. On the train to the Capitol, Haymitch asks Katniss if she will pass the marmalade. So Haymitch is basically Paddington.
No.
Second, yummy. I mean, but I mean, Paddington. I know Paddington is a million times better.
But icon.
So let me rephrase.
Feminist Haymitch? Icon Paddington Bear.
I mean, you're not wrong. No, he is a feminist icon. Haymitch is trying to emulate Paddington in this scene, but he does not succeed because Haymitch sucks and Paddington would give him a hard stare.
And second, Paddington would never wear that wig.
Paddington
or be drunk.
Paddington wears raincoats.
I was
going to
say,
getting
he's always prepared to be wet, though.
Really, he should have been in the Hunger Games.
He should have.
He would have won.
He would have died immediately.
Almost instantly.
And then finally, there is a cat that belongs to, I think, Prim that hisses at Katniss at the very beginning. Just reminder that cats do have 8 nipples, and that's
yes.
Cat
and
with
Katniss.
Caitlin.
I actually
Katniss. Cat hiss.
Wow.
I was
good
on
point. How many nipples does a Katniss have?
I was on the phone with my boyfriend, and I accidentally called her cat call Everdeen 3 times. I was like, "Yeah, cat call," and he was like, "No, no, no."
Any other final thoughts?
That's all I got.
All right, let's. Yeah. Does the movie pass the Bechdel test?
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, doesn't it never not pass the Bechdel test?
I mean, when women are talking, it's rarely about a man.
It's about trying to stay alive.
Yeah, it's about like being hungry. What they should do if Katniss dies.
Right. Yeah.
How they should not be hungry.
Dystopia is going to be doing a lot for the Bechdel test. We just will not have time.
Yeah. To talk about men.
Yeah.
You're talking about survival.
Like, does it happen even once?
That it does not pass? That like two women talk about men?
Yeah.
I feel like maybe
the dad comes
PETA
up.
Gets
once,
brought up. Yeah, dad yeah, gets like brought up.
Times. What's her name? Elizabeth Banks, I think, is maybe it talking to her about the PETA fakery.
Something. But most of the time, between like Katniss and Prim, Katniss and her mom, Katniss and Effie, Rue. And Rue, it's passing.
I'd say
99.9%
pass it. Like, is always passing.
Okay. Which is very impressive for a movie this popular to like more often than not be passing the
mm-hmm,
Bechdel test.
For sure.
Yay, movie.
Hurrah. Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale, 0 to 5 nipples, based on its representation and treatment of women. Hmm. I'm going to go with, I suppose, a 3. Because on one hand, it's like, okay, great, you got this like kick-ass young woman who... the young people who this franchise is for can like plug themselves into and see an awesome kick-ass strong female protagonist represented on screen. It really bugs me about the love triangle and the romantic relationship that feels very wedged in and unnecessary. The failure to be more inclusive when it comes to race and the casting choices, stuff like that. But it is cool that she gets to, you know, use a weapon to kill people with and not a frying pan. So
yeah,
points for that. Mm-hmm. I'll give 1 nipple to Rue. I'll give 1 nipple to the Tooch. Mm. And I'll give my last nipple to
Two Buns, the girl with red hair who survives almost the entire time.
Oh, yes, Two Buns.
Clever Buns.
Gone too soon.
Clever Buns. I love Clever Buns. I would watch a cartoon called Clever Buns. Clever Buns. Ooh, Clever Buns. I'll go 3.5 on this one. Mm. I liked it. I liked that just like in general, I enjoyed the movie way more than I was expecting to. And like I had a lot of fun watching it for the most part. And yeah, I mean, I think that this movie makes some pretty egregious errors in regards to how race is depicted when it seems like the source material was there for that to not happen. So don't like that. I like Katniss's character. I feel like she checks a lot of boxes, even though I found her to be boring personally. I guess the thing I'm really deducting nipples for, if we're getting into the weeds on it, is I just like, I wish that Rue was not sacrificed to give Katniss more, which again, I think is sort of like if she were not the only woman of color, that would be a less egregious thing. But right. Because of the way it's presented, it's just like, it just seems like you're sacrificing one of your only black characters to reinforce the white woman's mission, which is like, I don't. Yeah. Love that. And just kind of what we were all talking about with, I feel like there was a lot of stuff that we picked up on in this movie that the intended audience might not necessarily pick up on.
Right.
So hitting, I mean, in YA movies, you got to really kind of hit the points rather hard for them to get across.
It's true.
So I'll go 3.5 though. I enjoyed it. I'll give one to Prim because I liked her. I'll give one to Clever Buns, give one to Rue, and I'll give my halfy to Mr. Kravitz.
Yes, very yes. good. Mm-hmm. Kelly, Lindsay?
I'm going to do a 3.75.
I love when it gets exact.
Yeah, well, because I'm a little more okay with the romance just because I do like romances. I wish it was done better. Mm-hmm. All of my deductions are going to be mostly because of how race is kind of handled. I just think you can't help but look at this and it with the like the things that we know now. Mm-hmm. The wetness of the wig is that's maybe a full nipple. Wow. That I think so. The bulk of it is the wet wig.
Okay, fair.
But like you know, I think because I almost hate it more when things are too ham-fisted and when things are too like bonking you on the head with like this is feminist, like mm-hmm. I sure. am okay with it just because I'm being selfish and just purely rating this on how I'm liking it rather than like how I would have liked it at 13.
Sure.
To me, I think it did handle like, hey, this is kind of how the patriarchy is treating women and like kind of parading them around and that kind of thing. So for me, that's why it sits at a pretty 3.75. So I'm gonna do one for Clever Buns, because I did like her.
She really ended up being the hero of this.
Unsung hero.
I was going to say she's the MVP of Hunger Games.
Honestly, she was. She was Patton so busy.
Have won.
She was really busy. Fucking hustling.
Yeah, hustling. One for, Katniss's leather jacket at the beginning.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. One for Rue, because I did really love Rue, and I also wish she didn't die. And then 0.75 to the Tooch's teeth.
Ooh. Oh,
they
oh,
were
yes.
good. So yeah. good.
Thank you for not letting that drop off.
Yeah. Irresponsible of me as a veneer scholar to yeah. not point out.
Yes. I mean, veneers. Just very like yes. chiclety veneers. Really.
Full on. It's amazing you can understand a word he says.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's a professional.
He's a professional. Always yeah. a professional.
Yeah, what if he like had to train 10 hours a day to learn how to talk with those veneers?
I went to veneer training
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours. Before filming began.
Lindsay, how about you?
As far as just full on movie review, I would do 3 nips. Mm-hmm. As far as ethnic diversity, a mere 1 nip. Mm. As far as female representation, and this is mostly based on the actual content and intention, less so on direction. Mm-hmm. I think direction is where the messaging fell short, perhaps, mm-hmm. and where things got muddy. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was the writing. I think the writing was very solid. So I'm going to give it 4. I'm going to give it 4 nips for just female representation.
Nice. And that's one of the things where the Hunger Games fall short, where the Twilight franchise does not, because the first installment of the Twilight franchise was directed by a woman, where you would think that the Hunger Games would benefit from a female director, because it would, and they did not make the right choice.
We got to do more Twilight movies on the podcast.
I think but then I don't think Catherine Hardwick ever directs a Twilight movie again because sexism.
Right. It's true. But
it's true.
All right.
Anyway,
2 to Clever Buns.
Great. Thank you.
Full set for Clever Buns.
Yeah. 1 to Rue. And 1 to Rue's really artfully done funeral bed.
Oh, beautiful funeral bed.
The flowers.
Beautiful funeral bed.
Found a lot of good fan art surrounding that.
Oh, yes. That makes sense.
I bet. Well done.
Honorable mention to PETA as a rock.
Yeah. Oh, PETA as a rock.
No one gave
PETA as a rock.
PETA as a rock. But it's just because rocks, he was in disguise so well, and rocks don't have nipples. So
yeah, that is
he
why.
Was concealed. Sure. Yeah,
that is why.
Covered in nipples.
Were Clever Buns buns just nipples?
I mean, yes.
A deep feminist reading does reveal.
Clever nips.
Well, thanks to the both of you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. This is very fun.
What would you like to plug? Where can people follow you online, individually, as a podcast? You name it.
I am Kelly Nugent. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kelly Nugie, KellyNugee. If you have El Rey Network on your cable package, you can watch me on El Rey Nation. That is Thursday nights, 7:30 p.m. Pacific, where I talk about all things pop culture. You can listen to my podcast, Same Day Shipping, where I ship everyone with everyone. And you can also listen to me and Lindsay's podcast, Teen Creeps,
where we review YA pulp fiction like Christopher Pike, R.L. Stein, and many, many more. We'll have to get you on the podcast now because we already had Jamie.
Come full circle.
So I'm Lindsay Katai. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at LINDSAYKATAI. And please check out the Cartoon Network show Infinity Train, which is out there to find now.
Yay!
Finally. Very excited. I think everybody who watches it will like it.
Hell yeah.
Incredible.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having us.
And may the odds ever be in your favor. Oh, we have to plug stuff too. You can follow us.
And I was like, are we going to keep going? You can catch us on all the social meds at BechdelCast. You can sign up for our Patreon at Patreon, aka Matreon, at patreon.com/BechdelCast, where we're serving you 2 extra episodes a month for $5.
What a bargain.
Wow.
And you can get our merch on our merch store at tpublic.com/TheBechdelCast.
Stay tuned for Clever Buns merch.
Yes. Oh, God.
Feminist icon PETA as a rock.
Yes. PETA as a rock. Yeah, that would be so good. Oh, PETA, if you could somehow get the, like, do something with the Chevy logo with, like, painted as a rock. And then, like, PETA popping out of it with a huge gaping wound in his thigh.
I love living in niche culture.
Absolutely.
It's good.
It's maybe that'll be in our merch store. But, yeah, check us out on all those places. Also, BechdelCast.com for our live appearances and things like that. Because, you know, we have live shows here and there.
Yeah.
And... once again, may the odds be ever in your favor. Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA. And I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.